Welcome back to It's About Time, episode number 4. I'm Nate.
I'm Josh.
Thank you guys for coming back and listening. We're going to talk a lot tonight about the Redskins and their meaningless 29-17 loss to Denver in the preseason last Friday. We're also going to talk about the Nats. We're going to do them second this time, the first time we've done them second. The Redskins will be first. We'll lead off with them. Got a bunch of stuff to cover there. Then we'll get to my final thoughts and Josh's final thoughts. How you doing this week, Josh?
Well, and yourself?
You know, I've gone through the 5 stages of grief with the national season pretty much being over. Come to the acceptance portion of my grief. So I'm better than I have been over the last couple of weeks. I'm not as apathetic.
Their season's definitely over.
Oh, it's totally over. You said this before we jumped on. The Calvin Herrera injury kind of puts a fine point on the end of the season.
Yeah, because literally, it just sums up the entire season because Davey Martinez can't do anything right. And I'm not saying that he should not have been in the game, but every time he does something, it always bites him in the ass.
It really does.
I mean, oh, I'll get him work because he hasn't pitched in, I think, what, 4 days?
5 days.
5 days.
And actually requested to pitch regardless of situation.
Right. So we're going to put him in a meaningless ball game.
15-0. Just get some work in, bud. Yeah, you can't blame Davey. But it does seem like it's anything that he does just blows up in their face.
Yeah. And, I absolutely 100% don't blame him. You know, no. But I mean, it really does sum up their whole season because he can't pull any of the right strings.
And when we get to the Nats section, my tune is going to change a little bit. I am still a staunch supporter of Mike Rizzo, but I've got some harsh words for him when we get to the Nats section. I think it's time to do a little bit of an autopsy on this season and look ahead a little bit to what this year and next year will be.
So just to summarize, you're probably going to agree with everything I've been saying for the last 3 weeks.
All right, it's going to be a boring conversation.
Good.
It only works. This whole thing only works when you and I don't like each other and disagree.
No, it's fine. As long as you start that with, I understand that I was wrong and you were right.
I think you said that at the end of podcast number 2. Another instance in which I'm right and you're wrong happens a lot, and I did not like that. In this case, I'm going to have to eat some crow, and
which
I will happily do that
all the time. There's a reason why some people refer to me as the Oracle.
That's right. Shout out to Dr. Mark if you're listening.
He's probably not.
But he coined the phrase the Oracle because Josh made 12 consecutive bets in a row, and then bet all of it on the final bet, and subsequently lost.
My win percentage is still super high.
Yeah, you're the only gambler in history with a 900 winning percentage.
And $0.
$0 with a net negative in your account. Anyway, let's jump right in. We're going to talk about the Redskins first. 29-17 loss to Denver, preseason game 3. The game that they really talk about, it's the only game that means anything. It's the quote-unquote dress rehearsal. Alex Smith only played less than 2 quarters. 3 for 8, 33 yards. He was sacked once for a 5-yard loss. The big story, which we will talk about, Adrian Peterson. I've been calling him AP. I read in an article today his nickname is AD for all day, and he doesn't like being called AP. I'm going to continue calling him AP.
Well, I mean, you know, it could get confused with the Associated Press.
That's right. That's okay. He had 11 carries for 56 yards, a 5.1 yards per carry. Your boy, Capri Bibbs, only 2 carries, but for 41 yards. Rob Kelly, not so great. 8 carries, 19 yards. I think Kelly's guaranteed to make the roster, but I don't think he's going to touch the ball that much. Josh Doctson, no catches. Where was he?
Not real sure.
Yeah.
He was there.
Witness protection, probably. And then Richardson had 2 catches for 31 yards. So let's start with AP. How impressed were you with his first performance in the Burgundy and Gold?
I thought it was awesome, and I'm just going in total homer mode, super excited about this year. I still say my favorite run was the one where he got stuffed, I think, a yard into it, and actually, I mean, he got stood up, the linebacker met him, but he kept churning and probably gained another yard. I mean, I think that if someone's going to have a good 33-year-old season, he probably has the best chance to do it. As we talked about last week, you know, the last 4 years, he's probably played, what, a combined 20, 22 games or something like that.
Right. I think the one thing he showed was he still had power. He still had a motor. He doesn't have the speed that he once had. But then again, he had exceptional speed. Now maybe he just has above average speed. He certainly has a burst that nobody else on the roster outside of maybe Chris Thompson has. Bibbs has it, but Bibbs, as soon as he gets touched, is usually going to go down. AP, at least in this game, showed he's going to hit a hole. I love that. Put one foot in the ground, take one cut, you go up the field. He looked legitimate. My question to you is it real? Is it sustainable for him over 16 games?
Oh, definitely not. Yeah. But I'm going to hope it. Right now, I'm going to say, heck yeah! AD, AP, all day.
All day. My first thought really were, A, the fans at the stadium, the very few that were there, really treated it. I think they were a little overzealous. I mean, standing ovations for him after runs. The broadcast, Joe Theismann, I mean, just historically, just pom-poms, Homer. They were just going overboard. I'm like, come on, guys. I mean, it's a meaningless preseason game. The guy's fresh. He's motivated. Where is he going to be week 7, week 8? I don't know. I think if they limit his carries, if he's healthy, that he could have a meaningful impact as a role player. Is he a focused 25, 30 carry a game guy? He's not. I don't think he is.
No chance. I think if you get 700 or 800 yards out of him.
Right.
And four and a half. I would say over 4 yards a carry would be a stretch.
You said last week if you're doing 3.5 yards a carry, you're in second and 7 or second and 6. That's manageable. And with Jay's passing game, I think you're good there.
Yeah. I think that one of my coworkers went to the game, and he sits low, season ticket holder. He'll actually be featured. He's going to be one of the fan of the games this year. It's like because he's one of the 5 season ticket holders.
Right.
So, you know, he had a 20% chance of winning.
It's a very thin pool.
Yes, very, very thin pool. But he said the AP chants were annoying him, like it was a little bit much, and that some gentleman next to him was like, offensive line, offensive line. And I was like, you know what, that is a good chant because that offensive line is pretty good. And if it can stay healthy, that 3.5 yards could be 5 yards a carry.
No, I think the offensive line is one of the best in all of football. And we got to see a taste. Trent Williams played a couple of drives and looked great. And then they got him out. And that offensive line is going to give AP the opportunity to, I guess, revitalize his career, if not maybe add a year or two onto his career.
Yeah, I don't know about at 33 revitalizing. I think it's more of like fading into the sunset.
Or hanging on by the skin of your...
You know, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, they're holding hands together.
What do you think his workload should be? You said 700-800 yards. Is it 10, 15 carries a game? I mean, he was announced today, Monday, Monday, August 27th, that he will not play in the final preseason game, which, I mean, if anybody who's going to make the roster is playing, we got some issues there. But he was also named, after one game and being on the roster for less than a week, he was named the starting running back. How does it, in your eyes, how does it work?
What was his competition, Fat Rob?
It was Fat / Skinny Rob, Capri Bibbs, who now is probably on the outside looking in.
Yeah, basically he's a clone of Chris Thompson.
Right.
Right,
but if you carry four backs, Peterson, Kelly, Thompson, and then it's either Perine or Bibbs, and you got to think it's going to be Perine.
Yeah, just based on the draft pick. But, I mean, he can go the way of Matt Jones.
Right. I like what Capri Bibbs can do. I like what Bibbs can do on special teams, too, and out of the backfield, and also kind of as security for Chris Thompson, because we don't know what Thompson's going to give you week one. We don't know if he's going to be 100% healthy. We don't know if he's going to have the burst that he had. I mean, he was exceptional last year. Is it realistic to expect that Chris Thompson is going to be what he was in the first half of last year? I don't think it is. He's got to come back from that injury. It could take him half a season, a full season to come back. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, I almost think you have to keep Bibbs, right? Because you want that third down back. I mean, you're certainly not going to, again, like we said last week, AD is an underrated receiver out of the backfield, but I think you have to. Oh, that's tough. I mean, they're going to know. It is, like you said, it's going to come down to how healthy he is.
I think it wouldn't be outside of the realm of possibility if they kept 5 running backs. I think
And two quarterbacks?
Well, they're definitely only going to keep two quarterbacks. They signed a quarterback this week just to play in the fourth preseason game because it doesn't sound like Colt's going to play at all.
Kevin Hogan is terrible.
He's god-awful, and he's just there right now to fill a roster spot. He's going to play probably a half on whenever they play this week. I haven't even looked at the schedule. And then this guy that they signed, he'll play the other half, and then I think they'll both be cut. Hogan might make it to the practice squad. But Bibbs doesn't make it to the practice squad. I think another team picks him up. I think there's a good chance
of absolutely.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Same with P. Ryan, probably. And like you said, the draft pick is tied to P. Ryan. I wouldn't be shocked if it was five running backs and maybe only two tight ends.
Really? You wouldn't keep Sprinkle?
I would, personally.
I mean, I just like saying his name.
I do, too. I would, personally. But with the big question mark over the running back position and what was out there, I think some people might look back and go, how fortunate were they that Adrian Peterson was available? But then again, 6 weeks from now, he could be broken down and be done. We don't know. But let's talk about that for a second. Age 33 and over seasons of productive running backs, I'm going to ask you a question, Josh, because I know you know the answer. Who is the most productive running back in the history of the NFL age 33 and over?
John Riggins, all day.
And you sent me a text message. So you sent me a text message last week. You said, how fitting is it that Riggo is the greatest running back in the history of NFL at 33 and over? And I have 33 years old and over, and I have his statistics here. After his 33rd birthday, he had 1,055 carries in four seasons, 3,816 yards. In 1983, he was 34 years old, had 375 carries for 1,347 yards, and in 84 at 35, 327 for 1,239. I mean, he was prolific. That's what made him a Hall of Famer. Can we compare Adrian Peterson to Riggo? I think we're going way out of bounds here.
But, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Nope, I'm all in.
I went off rails, baby. But I, you know, it's one of those things that it's been done, but you pulled up a list the other day. It hasn't been done by much. I mean, the greatest season ever was what Warwick done.
Yeah, for what, 700 and some yards?
Right.
Not good.
At age 33. Riggo certainly 34 and 35 was prolific. It was a different game back then too.
Correct, yeah. Absolutely nothing recently.
No.
I mean, Warwick Dunn was tiny.
Right. And Riggo was behind the greatest offensive line ever. I don't think it's too much to say that. Behind the original Hogs. So I think we're going to wait and see with AP. I think he's better than anything they had on the roster. I think Rob Kelly backs him up. I think you're going to see two-thirds of the first and second down carries go to AP. A third of them go to Rob Kelly. I think that's probably right. I don't think if you give him 25 carries a game, I don't think he makes it a whole season. I just don't think that that works.
I agree with that.
So let's talk about Alex Smith played less than two quarters in the entire preseason. The starting offense never got going. It seems like Jay Gruden's playing his guys minimally. Do you think it'll have any impact on the season, on the start of it? Do you think that they're going to have a problem getting the engine going, get moving in the right direction?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's just what football is now. I mean, is there really a point for the preseason anymore? It's just extra money for the owners is the way I look at it. More sub-rate, you know, subpar football. That first drive that he had showed me that, I mean, it seems like he has more of a comprehension of the offense than Kirk did.
Yeah, the first drive in game two.
Correct.
The only drive that he played in that.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, yeah. Something I found interesting, I found out the Rams offense, the Los Angeles Rams offense, they didn't take any snaps at all in the preseason. Sean McVay said, nope, I'd rather them go into the season healthy with no game action because I know that they know what they can do. You know, Jared Goff coming back. I think he's, you know, Gurley is going to be great. Trent Williams only played one quarter. I'm fine with that. I didn't think he'd play at all, to be honest. I don't have a huge issue with it, but it will be a talking point if they don't hit the ground running in week one.
Of course it will be, right? But I think I'm fine with it. I mean, especially when you lose guys.
Yeah.
You're gonna be extra cautious.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think another thing too, which was really interesting about why I think game three looks so poor, it looked like to me, and I don't know how you felt, it looked like Jay was really focused on feeding Adrian Peterson the ball to see what he could do.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, they did not care one bit about the outcome of that game.
Oh, totally. And also, I think that Alex Smith, he threw a lot to Vernon Davis. I don't think the receivers were getting open, which if you're really going to have something worry you, that would worry me a little bit. Because a lot of his targets were secondary looks to Vernon Davis. Like I said, Doxson wasn't even targeted. Richardson had two catches. But he had time to throw the ball. There just was nobody getting open. And it looks like he made smart decisions for the most part. I don't really have a problem with the way things went. It was a horrible game to watch, though.
It was. Not football. I would have opted for, like, just working on fades every three downs, regardless of where you were on the field.
That should just be the name of this podcast, Work on Fades. You bring it up every week.
I mean, I just
the goal line fade, man. You want to see it.
I want to see it be successful. I don't want to see it. I want it to work
sure.
every time.
So I saw an interesting thing today, because I'm going to move on from that, because that's just, you know, poppycock in my opinion. But I saw something today. ESPN did a projection of their top 100 players of this year, well, who they anticipate will be the top 100. Number one and number two were your usual suspects, Aaron Rodgers and then Tom Brady. My question for you, how many Redskins do you think were in the top 100? And can you name them? I've got the numbers here, so I'm not going to play this game.
I will guess four, and it's Trent Williams, Josh Norman, Ryan Kerrigan, and Morgan Moses?
Close. You get two of them. There are only three. Nobody in the top 70.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. Trent Williams was the top Redskin ranked at number 73. Josh Norman was the second highest Redskin at number 83. And your brand new quarterback, Alex Smith, was ranked at 97. Kirk Cousins was ranked in the 80s ahead of Alex Smith.
That's fine. I mean, every projection you see, that it's like they're 9 and 10. They're basically the same quarterback.
Right. They're clones of each other, except Alex Smith is a little bit older.
And he's better.
There you go. You heard it here first. Josh thinks that Alex Smith is better than Kirk Cousins.
It's because he's our guy now.
That's right. And we don't have to worry about the Kurt thing anymore.
Kurt.
We talked about this last week, though. They really like the chemistry that they have in the locker room. I think that that's a big reason for that is because they don't have big names. I mean, their biggest name out is Josh Norman. But then Trent Williams he's the leader of the team. I think he and Alex Smith are the leaders of the team. And if you're looking on defense, I think Kerrigan's the leader on that side, maybe even DJ Swearinger. So it is a group of what seem to be relatively low-key guys. I feel really good about the type of football they're going to play this year. I don't know if it'll result in wins or a playoff appearance, but I feel pretty good about the type of football they're going to play this year.
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. Not this year.
You think they're building towards something, though? I mean, they've got Alex Smith for at least four more years. Definitely his last team, unless he tries to glom on somewhere else. But do you think they're building towards... I mean, their offensive line is good, but...
Old.
Trent Williams is getting older. Morgan Moses is not that old. Brandon Sheriff's not that old. But their anchor has always been Trent Williams, and how many good years does he have left before his body just quits on him?
I would say two, three at most.
And they don't really have, if Doxson doesn't pan out, they don't really have a legit number one receiver. They don't even really have a legit number two, maybe. I mean, you've got a decent slot guy in Jamison Crowder. If he can hang on to the ball, you have two decent tight ends. It'll be interesting to see. I think that they have a really good potential at being productive this year. I think it could be exciting football to watch. Speaking of exciting football, I had a question for you, and it's actually not in our outline, so I don't want to catch you off guard. What are your thoughts on this new helmet rule?
That's terrible.
It's going to swing a game. It's really going to decide a crucial game at a crucial moment. A running back dropping his head, going into somebody, 15-yard penalty.
You mean like running the football?
Right.
I mean, they've even admitted it. I want to say, I forget which referee they were interviewing, but he said, you know, this isn't a rule that's going to change in a year. It's going to take 2, 3, 4 years just for people to get used to it. It's garbage. I mean, how are you supposed to run someone over? Like shake their hand, ask them to politely move away.
And you're supposed to run, which is completely the opposite way of anybody's taught. You're supposed to run head up. And you're supposed to... The player that has the lower center of gravity is going to win a contest. That's why they lower themselves. That's why they get in a crouched position when they're running. If a running back that runs high is going to be easy to take down. And I don't know how you change football that way.
So if you're running... Let's say you try and get low, but you still have your head up. Don't you think that almost opens you up to more neck injuries?
Yes, I do. I think it opens you up to more neck injuries. You just see them coming as opposed to not seeing them coming. I think that's the only difference.
Right, which is probably worse.
Right.
It'd probably be better to not see them coming.
Right.
You'd be more relaxed when you get knocked out.
Yeah. And you know, you wouldn't have nightmares dreaming about the visual of a 500-pound man coming at you. But I do think it's going to swing a game. They did say that the flags in week 3 of the preseason were down significantly on that particular point. I don't know how you can flag a running back for running with their head down. I don't understand it. I think they've gone way overboard. We have beat this topic to death, but it's just another thing that is going to make this game more and more unwatchable, in my opinion.
All right, well, I agree. I mean, it's culminating in a just bad football.
Right, and it's leading also to people... even the people commenting on the game, not understanding the rules. There was a run where Adrian Peterson, it might have been the 3-yard run.
He should have gotten a penalty,
right?
According to the new rule.
He put his head down, and Joe Theismann's like, I think AP's going to get a 15-yard penalty. And then they ended up calling a late hit, which was a good call. The guy dove in late,
right,
hit him in the back, and they called it because he led with his helmet. I'm like, well, it was just a late hit. I mean, that's who cares that he led with his helmet?
Should that have been 2 15-yard?
It should have been offsetting penalties. Or it should have been 2 on the defense and 1 on the offense. But it's just one of those things that we're going to get to a big division game, and it's gonna turn it, and people are going to be outraged. Just like the catch rule has been a debacle over the last few years, it's going to be the same thing.
Well, like how can you play smash-mouth football anymore? How can you shove a ball down someone's throat? You can't. You can't do it. I mean, it's not... I just don't understand. I fully understand and appreciate player safety. And the CT issue is real. But again, it's a choice that every one of these human beings makes, and they are more than handsomely compensated for doing a job.
You're absolutely right. You know, I know that they found CTE in high school players, all that stuff. You're never, in my opinion, going to fully eradicate that from the game. It's just part of it. It's like boxing. Boxing has become less popular because of the violence of it. It used to be people boxed out of necessity because they had no other means in life. Now it's less and less people for that purpose. It's still entertaining. UFC is entertaining as hell to watch, and it's significantly bloodier than football is or boxing.
Oh, I miss 80s boxing. I mean, I don't miss watching someone's ear get bit off.
That's 90s.
I'm just saying, like, that's why I miss 80s boxing. Didn't have people biting people's ears off in the 80s. That was broadcast on pay-per-view.
You remember
the pay-per-view fights?
Yeah, you remember the big fight, Riddick Bowe against Evander Holyfield? I mean, those were great. And I don't know, man. I said this a couple weeks ago. We might be seeing the decline of football.
I'll tell you what. Back in my day, men were men.
Back in your day. What was that, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
The Sean Taylor years.
Well, no, it was like 20 years ago. You know, 5 miles uphill, both ways. In snow.
Right. Yep. Final thought about the Redskins. First extended look at Payne and Allen together for about a half. Any thoughts on that? How do you think they went?
Very well. I think it's going to be very difficult for two people to stop those two humans. I think they are going to consistently take up anywhere from 2 to 4 to 5 people, because it's going to take a back block. I mean, they're going to be able to move. We should finally have a front that, instead of losing a yard or 2 yards, to be able to push back into the pocket. They're going to create sacks just by collapsing the pocket.
Kerrigan and Smith are going to have monster years because, like you said, it's going to take 3, sometimes 4 guys in the middle to block the two of them. It's going to free up Kerrigan. It's going to free up Preston Smith. I do believe the front 7 is going to be able to generate a ton of pressure.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see, again, as is true whenever you're talking about the NFL, injuries notwithstanding, you're going to see a huge step forward for the defense. And these two guys, I'm really excited about this. They were not flashy picks when they were drafted. I mean, defensive linemen rarely are. I don't even think J.J. Watt was really that flashy of a pick when he was drafted. But he's a difference maker. And I think these two, Jerron Payne looked, he looked amazing. He looked light on his feet, like he had power, like he had good vision. I really look forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah, I would absolutely not put them in the same league as J.J. Watt right now.
I was not. I apologize. I was not comparing them to J.J. Watt. I'm saying that those types of picks, J.J. Watt being the best defensive player in all of football, maybe even in the scheme of things, the best player in all of football, I would not compare the two of them to him. I'm saying that picks like that, defensive linemen, are not usually highly touted. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Like the year the Redskins drafted Dana Stubblefield. No, they didn't draft Dana Stubblefield. Scratch that. The year they drafted LeVar Arrington, I was thinking of something else. Yep, that was a stupid moment by me. Anyway.
I actually don't even have a response because I'm not sure what you're talking about.
The year they signed Dana Stubblefield and Den Wilkinson, it was a big deal. But usually defensive linemen are not a big deal when they're signed, drafted, what have you. That was my point. Sorry, J.J. Watt, who will never hear this podcast. I was not comparing Payne and Allen to you, at least not yet. And I still want them to go get Khalil Mack.
Never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. I'm saying I wanted to see them do it.
I mean, it's fine. You're about to tell me that I'm right, and you were wrong. So you can just keep spouting off random ideas that we'll correct in 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. I mean, if that's the way you want to look at it. I think that wraps up some of the Redskins. I mean, again, it was a meaningless football game and not something that there's not much to talk about there. Adrian Peterson's a real story. Not going to play in week 4. Is the starting running back going into the season. And it'll just be interesting to see how much rhythm Alex Smith and the offense have, considering the fact that in real games, they didn't really get many reps. So it'll be interesting to see.
They'll be fine. They're professionals.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the Nats in a minute. We'll be right back. All right, Josh, let's jump into the Washington Nationals, the baseball team here in D.C., I guess as they are referred to now. Bob Nightingale from USA Today called them a national embarrassment this week after the trade of Daniel Murphy and Matt Adams. Just a quick recap of the Nationals so far. Again, this is before the start of play on August 27th, Monday. They're 65-66, 8.5 games back in the National League East, 7.5 games back for the second wild card. They have 31 games left. Season is over. I think we both agree that it's over. A point that I would bring up, Mike Rizzo said last week, I know how much you care about Mike Rizzo.
Not at all.
Yeah. He said last week that he thinks 88 games win the NL East. If that holds true, the Nationals would need to go 23-8 to finish with 88 wins. Likelihood of that, less than 5%?
Zero.
Zero, okay. I'd say 1%. I think that after getting shut out 3 games in a row this past week, they're just not good. I mean, they get shut out 3 games in a row and then they score 15 runs. I don't know what's going on with the team, but I don't know, man. They're so inconsistent. They are so mind-bogglingly inconsistent, so frustratingly inconsistent. I just don't understand it. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, they're bad.
Yeah.
They just, every which way they can be bad, they are.
Yeah, I think there's no other way to put it. They traded Murphy and Adams last week. For Murphy, they got a kind of a single-A middle infielder, Monasterio, I think his name is.
Huge prospect.
Yeah. And some cash considerations and a player to be named. And then Adams, it was all cash.
Yeah, good for them.
So what was the point in your mind?
I don't know. I guess they just wanted to save money.
Yeah, I think the real reason, I think what I read, is they wanted to try to get under the luxury tax this year. And they're pretty close. I don't know the exact numbers. It did save them about $5 million trading the two of them, and they got some because both teams took over the whole contract.
Yep.
So
as a fan, I could care less if they're in the luxury tax. It makes absolutely no difference to me.
The only reason to care about it is that if Harper leaves at the end of the season, the compensation pick, if they're over the luxury tax, is a fourth-round pick. If they're under, it's a second-round pick. So that's – and it's – but again, the tax on the luxury tax – it is no concern to a fan because you're not paying it. And believe me, these teams are making money hand over fist. But I think that was when Rizzo said in his press conference, he said, this is to help us build our roster moving forward. I don't think it was 100% a lie. I think it was spin, but I don't think it was a lie.
How is it helping? Are you just saying that because you get a second round pick instead of a fourth round pick? Are you taking it that's what, because they're going to assume that they're losing Harper?
No, I think that they're going to use the money that they save plus the money they're saving that they don't have to spend towards the luxury tax. What he's saying is they're going to use that towards talent. I think that's what he's saying.
And by talent, you mean?
Bryce Harper.
So they're going to have the same team they had this year, but worse next year.
I mean, that's a conversation for another day, I think, about how you construct the team. That is something I'd like to touch on later, is about whether or not they should re-sign Harper. That's kind of like the big elephant in the room. But I do think that the trade had a point. The only thing I don't understand, you traded Murphy. You opened up a hole at second base. I think you know what you have in Wilmer Defoe. He's a good ball player. He's a utility guy, I think, in the long run. You have a guy at AA Harrisburg in Carter Kieboom who's one of the top middle infield prospects in all of baseball. And Brizzo just out of hand says, nope, we're not bringing him up. He's never played second base professionally. We're not going to put him in that position. And my question is, why not? See what you got. What's the harm in putting him at second base? I mean, do they think they're going to destroy his confidence?
Here's a better question. Why is he even playing shortstop now?
No, because you should have your starting shortstop for at least the next 4 years in Trey Turner. But so probably then, the next 10 if you can get him to an extension.
Not if you sign Harper. But that's a whole point for another day. Why, if you are assuming that Turner is your shortstop, do you have your top three prospect, top four prospect maybe?
I think he's the second. Now that Soto's behind up, I think he's Robles. The second prospect behind Robles, yeah.
Why would you not, at least now, which there's been no indication, move him to second now? That's right. Fine. Tell him that he's not major league ready, which, who cares? Get him a major league at bats. You're not going to, this isn't like, it's not football where you throw in and you're Joey Harrington and you get shell shocked. Go get your major league at bats. Hit 205. That doesn't matter because this season doesn't matter for them anymore. Get him experience. It's basically like a spring training. He'll get two spring trainings for next year and a chance to be the starting second baseman. If he can play shortstop, he can play second base. When you're recruiting people in college and looking at prospects, you look straight up the middle of the field, right? Catcher, shortstop, center fielder. Center fielder can play either position. Shortstop can play anywhere except first base because he's probably short. I mean, like how, what is going on in this organization?
I don't understand it. I think a couple of things. One, they brought Ian Desmond up because they had no other option. And the guy had 30 errors in his first season at shortstop. And I just, Anthony Rendon came up and he was a natural third baseman, but they put him at second because that's where the need was. They had Ryan Zimmerman at third. I don't understand it. These games, honestly, they really are. They're meaningless. So why not get some meaning out of them? Kid Jeffries Rodriguez yesterday pitched a gem. I want to see him every fifth day for the rest of the season because you're going to need at least two starting pitchers next year to replace Gio and to replace Hellickson. A minimum of two starters. You're going to be bringing back Scherzer, Strasburg, and Roark. You need a minimum of two starters next year. Rodriguez could be one of those guys. You got to see what you have in him. Same with Kieboom. You have a hole now at second base. Defoe is a good utility guy. I like Defoe. I like the energy he brings. I don't think he's an everyday second baseman. I think you got to find out what you have because if not, the market next year is going to be flush with second baseman. You could bring Daniel Murphy back among other people. You got to see what you have in this kid because you need to bring him up. He's not going to play short unless you move Trey somewhere else because this kid's not going to wait four more years to come up. He's got to play somewhere else. Where are you going to put him? You're going to put him in third and move when Rendon, if Rendon leaves? I don't understand it. It boggles my mind. Along those same lines, where's Victor Robles? I know that the outfield is loaded, but you tell Adam Eaton,
take the season off, man. Yeah. Get healthy.
Get your leg healthy, man. You don't need these last 31 games. Or you say to Bryce Harper, I read an interesting article today, a really interesting article about him taking reps at first base during warm-ups. Takes ground balls there. He's been working with, I can't remember who it was, maybe Chip Hale at first base. Why don't you platoon Harper between right field and first base? Give Zimmerman a few days off here and there. Get him rested for next year. And see what, get Robles up here. Get Robles major league at bats, for the love of God. He's the future. If not to play for the Nationals, show other teams what you have. Because if you re-sign Harper, you got to trade Robles. I mean, I think it's an either-or situation.
Right.
Because Eaton is controllable talent through 2021 at a cheap price, and he's kind of a do-everything kind of guy. I don't think you can get rid of him. And that's the decision this offseason. Again, it's something we have plenty of time to go into. But where's Robles right now, man? I don't understand it. Maybe there's internal conversations that we aren't aware of, but I don't understand that either. Along the same lines, why is Strasburg still pitching?
I mean, it just adds to the chaos of this year, right?
It had that feeling. I mean, he came back August 22nd, four innings pitched. His first inning, he strikes out the first two batters he faces on pretty filthy curveballs. But his velocity, his fastball started at 94, 95, ended after four innings, he was at 91, 92. That's a sign that there's something wrong. First of all, his normal velocity is 96, 97, sometimes 98. He started the game at 94, 95. Now, I know he didn't have a rehab start. It's only his second start in like 3 months. I get all of that. He said at the end of the game that he was healthy but fatigued. Is it time? It's got to be time to shut him down, right?
No, I think they'll keep trotting him out there.
But I'm asking you, if you were
running absolutely.
A team.
Absolutely. Let Jeffrey Rodriguez pitch. I mean, just anyone. Like, why? What are they doing? This just goes back to the central question of what the Nationals are doing right now.
They're putting themselves in purgatory, which is you're not getting better for next year, but you're also not competing this year. So what good are you doing your franchise in the long run?
The good news is, silver lining, this is going to be really odd for me. Throwing it out there, that the expectations should be really low on the Nationals next year, which means they'll probably win the World Series. Worked for the Capitals.
It will be the first year in, what, 6-7 years that they won't be favored to win.
The only problem is that the Braves are going to be really good for a really long time. And the Phillies could be even better.
They both have a lot of money to spend, too, and it's a pretty good free agent class. I think the Phillies are going to make a hard run at Machado. I think the Braves are going to make a hard run at Bryce. And
I'd love for Bryce to go to the Braves and sink that franchise.
I'm going to stay away from that for now. The Strasburg thing is interesting. He's in year two of his 7-year deal. He has opt-outs after years 3 and 4. He's not opting out. Nobody's going to pay him $25 million a year. He's a gnat for the next 5 years. And unless he comes back next year and wins the Cy Young, he's a gnat for the next 5 years. With that in mind, he should not. He's pitching right now. I don't know what's happening, but I don't want to know what's happening. I've got the game DVR'd so that I can watch it and be upset live. But he should really not throw another pitch the rest of this year. You got to protect his. You got to protect him from himself, I think.
I agree.
For 31 meaningless games, you're going to get six more starts out of him. What's the point? I don't understand. The logic is really. It's really starting to irritate me. And I think it rolls into, it's safe to say, sorry, we have a dog in the room, so you're going to hear the shaking and the breathing. It's safe to say the Rizzo, and here's where I'm going to eat some crow. Said it at the beginning. I'm going to say it right now. Josh, you were right.
I mean,
you were right.
Was there ever a doubt?
No. It's safe to say that Mike Rizzo and the Washington Nationals front office has had a terrible 12 months. In my mind, and you would actually disagree with where it started, I think it started by firing Dusty.
Sure, now I would say that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, at the time you agreed with getting rid of him.
Yeah, I wouldn't have hired David Martinez.
No, you would have hired probably Joe Girardi.
Yeah, would have paid him whatever he wanted.
Yeah. But knowing the learners, you should have known they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but I'm saying what you said what I would do.
No, 100%. So it started with Dusty, then it started in the offseason. They didn't add starting pitching depth. They came into the season with A.J. Cole as their fifth starter. No real depth in the minor leagues except for Eric Fetty. Then they go get Hellickson. You know what's sad is they had Edwin Jackson in camp, and he's having a great year for Oakland. I mean, you couldn't have counted on him at the beginning of the year, but he's having a great year. The catching position continues to be the biggest hole on offense. Matt Wieters, since joining the Washington Nationals, out of 31 eligible catchers with 500 at-bats or more, is 29th out of 31 with a 648 OPS.
Yeah, I mean, he was on the decline in Baltimore.
Yeah,
injuries. I don't know if you could call him a bust or if the injuries just caught up with him. But he's not. I mean, actually, I guess you could call him a bust because he was supposed to be. He is a fantastic defensive catcher. Still is. Knows how to work pens. Can throw people out. But offensively, has been a disappointment.
He was supposed to be a version of Buster Posey or Joe Mauer. That's what
again,
he was,
again, before injuries.
Before injuries. And, I mean, have you seen him run?
It's not good.
Catching, you know, because you caught. Catching does hell on your body.
Well, it's just a lot.
Yeah. But Wilson Ramos continues to produce. Even after two knee surgeries, he continues to produce. So that certainly, they didn't address that in the offseason. And then you get to again, the Herrera trade looked good at the time. It's backfired. The trade deadline trade of Kinsler, we've beat that in the ground, DFA and Kelly. And then kind of culminating in not trading pieces at the deadline, waiting until mid-August, and you basically get nothing from Murphy and Adams. And Murphy, he won a series for the Cubs this past weekend. I mean, Murphy was a guy you could have gotten something for, same with Adams.
Yeah.
Not a banner year for Rizzo in the front office. I don't agree with you. I don't think that it's undone everything that he's done in this 8-9 years he's been here. I don't think you start from scratch. I don't think you do.
I disagree with you.
Okay.
I think as long as I said this last week, I'll say it again. As long as he is here, they are not going to win a World Series. So let's jump into Bryce Harper because I have an alternative in your little world of signing Bryce Harper that I think is much better and would lead to a World Series title.
Lay it on me, my friend.
I think.
This is where it's going to get fun because I have a lot of notes in front of me about this. Go ahead.
Kershaw opts out, and I'd pay Kershaw, Turner, and Rendon.
You think Kershaw opts out?
Probably not, but
So in an alternate reality.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get Kershaw because I don't think he can stay healthy for 162.
Yeah, just like I wouldn't sign Steven Strasburg because he can't stay healthy for 162. That was a waste of money.
I mean, yeah, it's starting to look that way. It didn't look that way at the beginning of the year after the dominant postseason he had and the great year he had last year where he finished third in Cy Young voting.
It's one season, though. It's like hard.
It's a what have you done for me lately? You made a comment to me last week. It just really, we kind of got into a bit of an argument over text message, and it just really enraged me. You said Harper's not a winner. He's won four division titles with the Nats, but he hasn't won a playoff series. I mean, that's well documented. But I looked through five of the game's best. It's pretty much on par with Mike Trout, Manny Machado, Mookie Betts, Paul Goldschmidt.
I would say all four of those have much less talent around them than Bryce Harper does.
Not Mookie Betts.
This year. Let's wait on Mookie Betts. Let's wait 2 months.
All right, well, prior to the 2017 season, you could have said the same thing about Jose Altuve.
But that was a young team.
He's been in the league just as long as Harper's been.
You're right, but look at how bad Houston was, and they developed along.
Look where the Nationals were before Bryce Harper joined.
Well,
since he's joined, they're the second winningest franchise in all of baseball.
You are a delusional Caps fan before the Caps.
I'm not. I'm looking at hard data.
I know you are. I'm just saying, like, this is what you would be arguing to a Pittsburgh Penguins fan while they're going, Sidney Crosby's a winner and Alex Ovechkin isn't.
Listen,
I know this argument.
Bryce Harper doesn't have great numbers in the postseason. He has decent numbers. He has an 801 OPS, which is above average. He only batted .211. He's got five homers in 19 games. Wait, let me get... Mike Trout played three postseason games, hasn't won any of them. He batted .083. Doesn't matter. Harper gets there, Trout doesn't.
Okay.
And the Angels spend as much money as Bryce Harper does, or as the Nationals do, I should say. Manny Machado has played in the postseason. I didn't write how many games. He did not play in 2014. He's got a .174 postseason average. With only one home run in seven games. Paul Goldschmidt is the only one. He has a 1,076 OPS. But he's only got one wild card win and no division wins. Is that on him?
Again, I'm going to say these teams are nowhere near as good as the Nationals have been.
So why does it matter about team performance with those guys but not with Bryce? Because for each season that the Nationals didn't succeed in the postseason, it didn't center around Bryce not doing something. 2012, the bullpen fell apart in Game 5.
Yep.
2014, the offense scored 9 runs. Harper scored most of them, drove most of them in.
True.
2016, they lost a heartbreaking 5-game series to the Dodgers. They were up 2-1. It's not Harper's fault. Last year, you said it yourself, it was terrible managing in Game 5. And the offense was quiet for the first, 16 innings of the series? And then Harper hits the big home run that ignites them. You can't call Bryce, I don't think you, in my opinion, you can call Bryce a loser.
What has he won? Besides,
what has Mike Trout won? What has Manny Machado won?
He's won a playoff series.
No, he hasn't. He didn't play.
He played one game, had 4 played appearances.
He did not play in 2014.
No, he played in 2012.
You're talking about a wild card. That's not a series. He won a 1-game wild card.
It's a win, isn't it?
Oh, Jesus. Paul Goldschmidt hasn't won any games in the postseason. Altuve, prior to 17, hadn't won any games in the postseason. You can't say that Bryce is 25 years old. He's younger than all of these people. I'm not being a homer. He's got a .280 career batting average, an .899 OPS. He's got a .138 OPS plus and 180 home runs.
Not a winner.
4 division titles.
Who cares?
I care. I'm a Nationals fan. They were 4 seasons of great time to watch baseball. Like, what are you talking about? Prior to 2011, we would have killed for 1 division title.
You know what? I'll just get you that participation trophy anytime you
it's
want
to. It's not a participation trophy. They actually won a pennant. It's hanging up in the stadium. The Braves won 17 straight divisions, right? 17? Am I right on that number? I could be wrong.
No, that's 17. Come on.
17 straight division titles. Look it up. Look it up. They won at least 15, maybe. I think it's 17. That's the number. They won 1 World Series. You're going to call John Smoltz?
It was 14.
Okay, whatever. You're going to call John Smoltz, Greg Maddux? They're not winners because they only won 1 World Series, but they got to the playoffs 14 times.
Well, they won a World Series.
One,
so they are winners.
Out of 14.
It only takes one. You can get as angry as you want.
I'm
but
not
until
angry. It's
I
just,
mean, I'll even relent when they win a playoff series. But they're not going to.
Baseball's the ultimate team game. You can't blame one person.
You know what? Let me sum something up for you. And this has happened multiple times just this year. When Bryce quits on a play. Have you ever seen Mike Trout do that?
To be honest, I don't watch many of his games, but I've heard that that does not happen. I'm going off of secondhand knowledge. I don't watch many of his games.
Altuve. One person you can say who does that is probably Machado. Mookie Betts, from what I've seen, again, I would say they have the least amount of knowledge, but you don't hear stories of him taking plays off.
The interesting thing about Machado, when I was looking at their career numbers, they actually comp the most together. Trout's way ahead of everybody for career.
Yeah.
So talking about career. If we're just going OPS, Trout's career OPS is .986. Goldschmidt's better than both Manny and Harper at .933. Mookie's slightly below Harper at .876. Altuve is below everybody at .820. But OPS, I think, is hurt a little bit by not having as much power. Altuve has the least amount of home runs out of all of those people. Here are the numbers comparing Bryce and Manny. Bryce slashes .280, .385, .514, and an OPS of .899. Manny slashes .282, .336, .486 with an .821 OPS. Harper has 180 home runs. Manny has 169. Manny's OPS plus is .121. Harper's is .138. They've played in just about the same number of games. Harper, statistically, is the better player. I think they comp the best. Manny's defense adds to his value.
Absolutely, 100%. And plays a premium position. Outfielders are a dime a dozen. I'll go sign Chris Davis.
With a K.
Yep.
Okay, not with a C, with a K. All right. The last thing I'll say about Harper, because I read this. This was kind of one of my final thoughts that was going to go off, is Barry Zwerluga wrote an article today that for the next 5 weeks, the Nationals are the only team that can negotiate with him. And a lot of factors go into it. Payroll size goes into it, all that kind of stuff. And we're going to talk about in the future ad nauseum what he means on the field. The only argument I'll make, I made it in the first podcast, and that's where we got the title from. He said that's an insult to Cal Ripken. Bryce Harper, regardless of his production on the field, is an iconic player. And there aren't many of them. And he has the ability to put a stamp on this franchise for the next decade and do something that this franchise needs, which is to build a rabid fan base. I think he can do that. That's why I think, based on the field, it might not make sense considering the depth they have in the outfield, but it's something they need to consider. And everything that he's knocked for, he's still a well above average Major League Baseball player.
Yeah, absolutely. But why would I pay a above average baseball player $40 million a year when I could find another above average baseball player?
He's a top 10 position player in all baseball.
That's absurd.
Absurd?
This year?
I just read... Oh, this year. I'm talking about in general. Over the last 6 or 7 years.
Who is
years.
He? Do you...
I'm looking at his numbers right here. He's a 900 OPS guy. I've read you two people. There are other people that have... But two people of the current stars, Goldschmidt and Trout, are the only two that have a higher OPS than he does.
That's... Okay, one stat. I mean...
Home runs. OPS plus. On base percentage.
I'm telling you, you can go out and find that exact production for $30 million less a year.
I'm not talking about production. I'm talking about what he means to the fan base, what he means to the franchise moving forward.
I mean, they got away with Ryan Zimmerman, who's a mute, for 10 years.
Yeah, and you talk about the fan base all the time being of 30,000 people.
He's been here for 6 years. If there's going to be a fan base, it's already here. What's he going to do for the next 10?
What happens to the fan base if he leaves?
Do people care at this point?
Yeah, they do.
That's what they care about. Him in right field.
Just him in general. I think he's one of the flashpoints for the team. I think it's him. I think it's starting to become Soto and Robles, and it's certainly Max Scherzer. I think they're the flashpoints.
Yeah, I would go. I mean, you have Scherzer. You have a guy that's passion
for 3 more years.
Like a guy that cares. I don't think you need him. I think he sinks the franchise. I think whatever you sign, I think it turns into a Stanton and Miami deal.
Okay.
I think it turns into fucking Mike Hampton or Denny Nagel.
Wow.
Because they're not going to... Who else are they going to pay? They won't be able to afford anything after they sign him at $35 or $40 million a year.
Again, that's talking about the nuts and bolts of it, which you're absolutely right.
Off the field, he's going to sell jerseys.
Tickets.
Sure.
Marketing.
Yeah, marketing, great. I don't see any difference from the previous 6 years to the next 6 years. You've gotten what you're... I mean, it's exciting. People have to be getting tired of what's going on the field.
Okay.
It's the same reason why everybody, all the Orioles fans, you hate to see Machado go, but you understand he had to go. I mean, it's terrible. It sucks. It's miserable. But I am, like, as a fan of the game, of that team, he had to go.
Can you explain to me for a second, because I'm not an Orioles fan, I don't watch much Orioles baseball. Can you explain to me why, I understand the Orioles are so far away from contending. Is that why he had to go?
You couldn't afford to pay him. I mean, there's no point to pay him whatever he's going to earn, which to me, I would pay him before I'd pay Harper in a heartbeat. There's nothing around him. Like, they have had no pitching for the last 6 years. It's been a miracle. Those playoff appearances are miracles.
They've been doing them with scraps.
You're signing Ubaldo Jimenez for $48 million, a 3-year, $16 million a year. I mean, Alex Cobb, who's pitched better. You're going out and getting Andrew Kashner. There's no pitching. Chris Davis? $150 million down the toilet.
It's an albatross of a contract, and you're never going to get rid of it. All right, I mean, you and I are on totally opposite sides of this. I'm a big Harper fan, and I think there is, for me, and you've called me every name in the book when it comes to this, and that's fine. For me, there's meaning to him being a lifelong National, and he's still, I think, a top 10 position player in all of baseball. And he's 25. He's younger than anybody else. He's younger than Manny. He's younger than Trout. He's younger than Mookie. He's... Could you imagine an outfield for the next 6 years of Soto, Robles, Harper? It's got to be the most talented outfield. I'm not saying it's the most productive. It's got to be the most talented outfield in all of baseball. That could carry their franchise. Even if Rendon leaves, that could carry their franchise. They still have Turner for another 4 years under arbitration eligible. Rendon's got one more year left. I love Anthony Rendon. And if it wasn't, if there wasn't a business case in there about selling tickets, etc., then Rendon's, I would take Rendon over Harper just because he shows up every day. He's consistent. I'm not saying Harper doesn't show up, but Harper does go through spells. He's become a streaky hitter. Rendon, not so much. He's pretty consistent. That's where your argument is. If you're going to spend the money, spend it on Rendon, Turner, and maybe even Roark. Probably get those three for what Harper would cost.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to win if you spend all that money on Bryce Harper. That's a guarantee.
I understand your point. My last question about the Nats, and then we'll move on to our final points. I think that's just going to be me tonight, and then Josh is going to yell at me. There's been a lot of talk that the trades of Murphy and Adams were a sign of the Nationals' window closing. Do you think that their window is closed, or do you think that they have another few years left?
I think this offseason will tell the tale. I would not be able to comment on that yet. I think if they sign Harper, then it's over. If they don't, then I think they're going to go out and get a starting pitcher or two.
Need at least one. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would get two. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be able to get, you know, you can go out and get Kinsler for a year. There's a lot of second basemen you could sign. DJ LeMahieu.
Oh, that Kinsler.
Yeah, Ian Kinsler.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about.
Yeah, we could bring him back.
Yeah, that worked. That ended so well.
Yeah. You know, you could go out. Heck, you could get. I mean, you could get so crazy with the ideas if you don't sign Harper. Go sign Josh Donaldson to a cheap contract. Move Rendon to second. You could do all sorts of crazy stuff. You sign Bryce Harper, you're not doing anything next year. It'll be the same. Same as every year. And then divisions, see you later. It's going to float away. It's going to pull a Kaiser Soze. Gone forever.
Good Kaiser Soze pull. Real quick before I forget, at least we're not the Mets. I mean, they did win 2 out of 3 this past weekend, but their future looks bleaker than just about anybody's. I mean, aside from DeGrom and Syndergaard, I mean, their starters can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, their lineup is in shambles. Their bullpen is now in shambles because they've traded everybody away. So at least it's obligatory, I have to say, at least once a podcast. At least we're not the Mets. But I don't think, and again, I am a homer, but I think their chances of winning a World Series moving forward are less than they were the last 6 years. I got to be honest. I don't know where I stand. I just spent 10 or 15 minutes talking about the reasons to re-sign Harper. I don't know where I stand on it yet. I just don't. I don't know what their internal thinking is. Is there an internal thinking that, you know, if you sign Bryce, you got to let everybody else go?
Oh, they are all in. They are 100% in on signing him.
I know.
Rizzo is tied to him. He can't let him go. It's the same reason why they signed Strasburg.
They signed Strasburg because at the time it made sense. He was having a great year. It made sense. It still might make sense. He had a great first year of the contract. This year he's been injury riddled. He could come back and have another gem next year. Will he? I don't know. I think he's turning into Mr. Glass. I don't think he can stay healthy. Is their window closed? I don't think their window's closed. I think that they have too much young talent to say that their window's closed. I think one good offseason cures their ills. They really need a catcher. I heard an interesting idea. I wonder where you stand on this. Say they re-sign Harper. Okay? I know immediately you're going to nix it. But say they re-sign Harper and then they go, okay, we're going to flip Robles for JT Realmuto. That solves our catching problem. He's the best offensive catcher in baseball. We've got him through 2021. What do you think of that?
I think it's comical if they do that because they should have done it at
the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If they do, oh my God. That
it would be too little too late because Realmuto could have made the difference. The problem was you still had Wieters at $10.5 million on the payroll. I'm just saying it could have caused not more issues than were already being caused in the clubhouse.
So why not trade? Okay, you get Robles, but you're also taking Wieters.
Yeah, and the last, $6 million of his contract.
That's my God, that's going to be awesome when they do that. Because if they sign Bryce Harper, Robles has to go. Doesn't make sense.
Well, you can't. Eaton's so cheap, and he's under team control. And he's really, you need a guy like him. And Soto's entrenched in left field for the next at least 6 years. So, yeah, Robles is the odd man out. You got Michael A. Taylor as your fourth outfielder. And you get him. That's the only trade that makes sense, is to go get the best offensive catcher, or second best if you want to consider Gary Sanchez, who has really had a bomb of a year. But, yeah, I don't think their window's closed yet. But they have to have a good offseason, and we'll talk about that as the offseason arrives.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Non-DC sports related.
Ooh.
Does J.D. Martinez win the Triple Crown this year? He is currently leading the league in hitting, one home run behind Chris Davis with a K, and seven RBIs ahead of Chris Davis. He's 1 point ahead of Mookie Betts right now. 337, Mookie's hitting 336.
Wow. I don't know, man. Because Boston's going to – how many games ahead are they? Can you pull that up? I think they're going to be able to coast to the finish line, which you might see him start getting some days off, which could impact his ability to drive in runs. Yeah. How far ahead is he in runs?
Seven.
RBIs?
Mm-hmm.
And he's how far ahead in home runs?
One. Or no, he's one behind
Chris behind Davis. Home. See, that's the thing, is Chris Davis is going to have to play all the way to the end. Have the Yankees closed the gap?
No. J.D. Martinez is a DH. He doesn't need days off.
I'm just saying, though. I mean, they're going to be able to coast to the finish line. I'm going to say no. I don't think he does it. I think Mookie probably keeps the lead on him in batting average. Or overtakes him in batting average.
Yeah, and they are actually only six games up on the Yankees.
But with 30 to go.
They've lost three. The Yankees have won four in a row.
Yeah, Sale going on the DL did not help them.
No, it did not. I don't think he does either. But I do find it interesting that he
was available. Relatively cheap. What's he making? $25 million a year?
I don't know how much he's making. Scott Boras client.
Well, he's got an opt out after his second year, though. So he's gone after year two. Unless they say the Red Sox this offseason might actually make a run to sign him to an extension. That'll be interesting to see. Let me ask you something non-DC sports related. Tiger versus Phil.
I hate having to pay for that.
Right. That was my point. Awesome event. Can't wait to watch it. Why the hell is it on pay-per-view?
Well, I mean, where are they going to get the $9 million from?
A sponsor. What? Multiple. FedEx pays how much for the FedEx Cup every year? And less people watch the FedEx Cup than watch... We'll watch this. You could get 10 million people to watch this.
Easy.
Not pay-per-view. How much are they going to charge? Did they say yet?
No, I don't know how much they're going to pay. That's a good question.
If it's $30, it's one thing. I still wouldn't pay for it by myself.
Oh, no. It's going to be $69.99.
And it's a joke. Because the other thing is, who wants to watch... Like, I want to watch a four-hour golf match, but it's a lot of dead time when it's head-to-head. It's a lot of dead time.
Yeah, but, like, if they're mic'd up... Could be cool. I assume they got to be mic'd up.
I hope they interact with one another. I mean, that's the whole point, right?
Oh, they will.
There's a history of them not liking each other, and now they kind of like each other.
That's cooled.
No, they like each other now. That's why they're doing that. Well, also the money. You know, Phil's a gambling fiend.
Bit of a gambling problem.
Bit of a gambling issue.
All right. I'm not one to judge. To each his own, right?
To each his own. So I have a final thought I'm going to jump into. First, before that, I've been meaning to say this the last couple of weeks. I keep forgetting. We do have a Twitter account, and we live tweet baseball games, football games. Not all of them. We like to see fan interaction if we can get it. Twitter account is ITSAboutTimeDC1, and I'll put it in the episode description. It's ITSAboutTimeDC and then the number 1. So follow us, interact with us. We'd love to hear from you guys, those of you that are listening. Josh always says there's only two listeners. I know for a fact there are slightly more than that, but I would love to hear from you guys. So my final rant, it's kind of a life, it's not really a rant, it's kind of just a commentary. My family had season tickets for the Redskins. My grandfather got them when they were at Griffith Stadium back in the 40s. And the last year that we had them was 2013. my old man by that point had basically was down to going to two or three games a year, and then basically said, I'm done. And I was done too. 2013 was a terrible season. It was the year of all in for week one. The biggest problem was we had four tickets, and then we went down to two, and we still couldn't find people to go, even if we were giving the tickets away. So my final thought for tonight, and I don't want to, we've been positive about the Redskins. I am very excited about this season, but as a lifelong season ticket holder up until 5 years ago, somebody that went to, if I calculated it, over 100 regular season games, I went to every playoff game. There weren't many in the last 20 years, but I did go to every playoff game in 91/92 when they won the Super Bowl, with the exception of the Super Bowl. I was shocked, and I've been shocked in week two and week three at how empty FedEx Field has been. It's preseason, but I've been to a lot of preseason games. That's empty even for preseason. I'm shocked that they're still selling seats for the home opener. Never seen that in my life. They're selling single tickets. They are marketing during game broadcasts. They're bringing guys into the broadcast booth. They're marketing the fan experience, food, dining, live play action from the south end zone where you can watch 19 different TVs. Really trying to take a page out of Jerry Jones's book in Dallas, where it's more about the experience than it is about the actual game being played. The biggest shocker for me, to fans who did not renew season tickets, had them in 17, have not renewed them for 18, the Skins mailed them preseason tickets and a parking pass for the final preseason game last Friday. A lot of fans were sent two tickets. I don't know how many, so a lot might be too many to say, but a good number of fans were sent two tickets and a parking pass, and they're being advertised. If you come back, we've got special concession prices for season ticket holders only. We're no longer selling obstructed view seats, which in the past have historically gone to opposing teams' fans. And now even they're sending out marketing brochures comparing what a season ticket cost to what it would cost to get it on a secondary market like StubHub. One of the ones I found most interesting, a Dallas game for two tickets, I guess, and a parking pass is what they were comparing it. $346 on the secondary market with an $89 processing fee or whatever they charge. Whereas if you were a season ticket holder, you could get it for $216. I never in my life, really, I never thought I'd see this. And I have to say this, I'm a diehard Redskin fan. I'll never root for anybody else. I get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing Dan Snyder's issues finally come home to roost. It's something that has been a long time coming. It took a long time to shed that many fans, and I'm happy to see it happen. And there's a part of me, I don't know how big of a part of me it is, I'd like to see the stadium half empty most of the season to send a message to Dan Snyder that you beat up on us for long enough. And now this is what happens to you. You can't fill this monstrosity of a stadium that you have. Continue gutting seats until there's no upper deck. Embarrass yourself.
That would be comical. I agree with all those statements. I think that, you know, as sad and tragic as that cheerleader story was, part of me was like, oh my God, it's finally going to happen. They're going to force him to sell the team. Like, I was like, oh, please, please have this, like, have him all over this, like, tie it back to him. Bad press, NFL's gonna be like, no, I'm sorry, you gotta sell the team. That didn't happen. Like you said, long time coming. It only took, I mean, it's really impressive for him to run the franchise into the ground like he has. Valuation's still super high, right? I mean, you have one of the most authentic and diehard fan bases, I think, in all of sports. One that could rival soccer hooligans in Europe, but I think they're fed up. It's that stadium's in the middle of nowhere. It's a crap stadium. There is literally no redeeming qualities to it. Someone the other day asked me, they had won tickets to the game, had a limo, like limo service they were driving, and they were like, well, what should I do when I get there? And I thought about it, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, there's literally nothing special about that stadium. Like, again, not to be a homer, but if you say, oh, I won tickets to an Orioles game, what should I do? Well, first thing I'm going to tell you is skip Boog's Barbecue and go get yourself a crab mac and cheese hot dog, and that'll be life-changing. Then go to Boog's Barbecue. Nats, I could care less about, but you've got Ben's Chili Bowl. Like, there's things you can go to that are authentically D.C.
You've got the right field mezzanine where they have happy hour beers. You've got, I mean, they have really built in Nationals Park a fan experience. So that, I know exactly what you're talking about. And they're trying to do that with the Redskins, but I think it's too little too late.
But they're still not a fan experience. We usually go to a game once a year, and we sat on the club level, and it's like Johnny Rockets, which, gee, I wonder who owns that. And I think, you know, you have like Madden consoles set up everywhere, and it's just, there's just no redeeming qualities of that. There's nothing that makes that stadium DC. It's just it's just concrete to me.
Look, man, let me ask you a question. Your answer might be different than mine. What's the greatest in-person experience you've ever had at any stadium?
Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Yeah, that's no. I mean, they're all Capitals.
To me, nothing will ever compare to RFK at its height.
That's true. Yeah. Watching the lower bowl,
right,
and actually seeing the stands go up and down. Right. Yeah,
I agree with that. It's unfair to say that FedEx should be RFK. RFK has so much history, but also those games were fun because the teams were good. And RFK didn't have that unique fan experience other than it was RFK Stadium. This day and age, you do need that fan experience, but, and they're trying to do it, but it's still not. It's just like, hey, come spend money on our concessions. Hey, come stand in our kind of blasé south end zone where there are 19 TVs. I just love the fact that they have to market themselves now. When he took over, the fan equity was so high, he was able to add seats to the stadium, raise ticket prices year after year, charge for training camp. I mean, everything that he did, fire Marty Schottenheimer after 1 year, everything that he did, embarrass the franchise, the Deion Sanders signing, I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. Everything he did chipped away at it, just chipped away at it, and it's gotten to this point of apathy. Look, I want them to win, right? I'll have tears in my face if they make it to a Super Bowl. I'll be the first. I will be. I will be an emotional mess. But there's a small part of me that wants them to lose every year from now until eternity when Dan Snyder sells the team because I want him to be miserable.
See, that's how I feel about the Nationals.
I know.
That's how I feel about Bryce Harper because I don't like him as a human being.
Okay. I don't know how to respond to that.
I mean, at least he could be like LeBron and do stuff for the community.
He does. He's got Harper's Heroes. Yeah, he's got other things that he does.
Yeah, Harper's Heroes. I'm sure he knows all about that.
He does. He does something every Sunday, a home game. He does. And they actually, for Players Weekend, they created bats for him and shoes and he wore.
Yeah, don't care.
Okay. Nothing he ever does is going to be good enough for you, and that's fine. It's fine.
No, that's not true.
He's not your type of
when
guy.
When he goes 50 and 150?
Oh. Who's the last person to go 50 and 150?
Stanton didn't go that. Stanton went, 50? Actually, was it Stanton last year?
He didn't have 150. 150 RBI? He didn't have 150 RBI. He had 50 home runs, though. He almost had 60, didn't he? What, he had 51?
Sorry, 60. He went 59 and 132.
Okay.
So when he goes 45 and 130, then I'll respect him.
Certain people that listen to our podcast, we won't name them, say that RBI is a garbage stat.
Okay.
I'd say 45 home runs and 400 on-base percentage would be pretty great.
Could care less about his on-base percentage.
Okay. Anyway, I think that's a good... Do you have anything that you want, any final thoughts that you've had kicking around your head other than more Bryce Harper negative press?
Do you know Stanton scored 123 runs last year?
Well, 59 of them he drove in himself.
Yeah, it's interesting what happens when you hit home runs.
Bryce Harper's got 30 of them.
Oh, wow. Wow. 30 whole home runs.
With 31 to play. He could finish with 40, theoretically. Gentleman's bet?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
He's going to finish with 40.
I bet he finishes with
40. Absolutely no chance. Zero chance. I will bet you $50 American.
$50 American it is.
I mean, that's a... You've said so many absurd things on this podcast.
Oh, bite me. I have not said absurd things.
You know who else has 30 home runs this year? Max Muncy.
Yeah, the rookie with Los Angeles. I know.
Joey Gallo has 34.
Joey Gallo, that's all he does. He strikes out and he hits home runs.
Sounds like someone else.
Harper's got, I don't know his numbers for the year. He's close to a 400 on base percentage. You can't compare the two.
212, 34, and 78.
That's Gallo.
Yeah.
Oh, Harper's sorry. At 250.
Bryce is hitting 38 points higher than him.
You were beating Bryce up when he was at 209. Now he's raised it. I mean, he's going to finish at 260 probably.
A regression back to the means. 260 is nothing to be impressed
it's
about.
It's not. It's not.
That should show you everything that you need to know about where you are on your Bryce Harper.
Not.
Oh, man, he said, 260.
He said it down here. But 260 after at the break he was hitting 214. Give me a break. It's a big jump.
It's a regression back to the mean.
It's not a regression.
It had
it's actually a
progression back to the mean.
I mean, if you're going to use a word, use it correctly. All right.
Is that the best you got? That's all you got today?
What? Attacking your vocabulary?
Damn. Whatever. You'll just be eating more crow next week.
Remember to follow us on Twitter. It's ITS About Time DC1. I don't know who It's About Time DC with no number after it is. It's not us. It's About Time with no apostrophe. ITS About Time DC1. Follow us on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you guys for listening. Any final comments, Josh?
I do not have any. That like, I can think of.
And I'd like to thank your dogs, Henry and Ty, for making the background noise today. We didn't need any music. We had the barking, which I'm going to try to edit out. And some heavy breathing from Henry. I think he might need a... I think he has a deviated septum.
He definitely has a deviated septum.
And Ty excessively licking himself. I think that might need to be checked out.
Inappropriate.
Totally. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Josh, thank you for the time again. It was a pleasure. And we will talk to you guys next week.